To badquaker.com podcast. Today is Friday. Hey, it's Friday the 13th. Friday, July 13th, 2012, and this is podcast number 168. And my name is Ben Stone, and with me today is Kai.
Hi!
Kai is, for the newer listeners, Kai is my daughter, and is she's with me sometimes. She moves around a lot. We'll get into that later. But so we don't get to have her on the show as often as we would like, but she is my co-host, and as far as we know, we're the only father-daughter anarchist podcast/radio team in this solar system. Possibly the universe, but we can't verify that. So anyway, on today's podcast... I did have some notes, and we're going to kind of bounce them around a little bit, but since Kai is available, we're going to take advantage of having her on the podcast. So it's going to be a lot more free-flowing than, well, no, that's not true. I started to say it's going to be more free-flowing than normal, except yesterday's podcast was live from the campgrounds there at Porkfest.
Oh yeah.
So that was about as free flowing as you could get. We were talking about like reptiles and things.
So. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Porkfest was a lot of fun.
It really was. And yesterday, also in yesterday's podcast, was the interview with Eddie Free.
Oh, cool.
And that was really neat. It was really neat to meet Eddie Free. You know, I had kind of watched him from a distance on the internet, and as soon as he walked up to the camp, it was like, hey, you're Eddie Free. It was like one of those moments where somebody sees some star or something, and they're like telling them who they are, you know, like, hey, I know you. I can't think of any stars, so it doesn't work.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Any celebrity that I tried to name would be so out of date and not at all hip anymore.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. I don't own a TV.
So now you are not actually planning, we don't know the future, but you're not actually planning on going to Porkfest next year because you're going to be...
hiking the Appalachian Trail. Yay!
It would be kind of interesting if you're in the area, because the Appalachian Trail goes like almost right past the campgrounds where Porkfest is.
Yeah, it's right near it. I don't know that I can actually get to New Hampshire that quickly. I will probably still be in Pennsylvania. At that time,
you will have hiked 20 feet.
I will be near the top of Springer Mountain in Georgia. I will have started in March, and I will be near the top by June.
My feet are killing me. I'm on my ninth pair of shoes.
No, I hope to actually be fairly well up the trail by then, but, you know, it is 2,200 miles this year.
Yeah.
They reroute it every year. They change it a little bit.
Why did they do that?
They do just trail maintenance and kind of switching it over to a different trail area to give bits of it breaks. And, you know, if there's been damage, trees go down and things like that, they kind of, you know, it doesn't change a lot, but it does shift a little bit each year. So...
And there, I imagine, there are just herds of people walking up and down the thing every year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots and lots of hippies patting themselves on the back.
Well, there's generally, I forget the exact numbers, but I think there's something like 900 thru-hikers that start every year, and I think there's like a couple hundred that make it.
Go ahead.
Well, but a lot of people section hike it and weekend hike it. So at any given point on the trail, I mean, thousands of people walk on it every year.
They're just not all dedicated to go one into the other.
Right.
Now, isn't there something about the difference if you're hiking north or you're hiking south?
Yeah, if you're hiking from Georgia to Maine, you have to start earlier in the year because Georgia is pretty warm, so you can start earlier. Mm-hmm. But Maine, by the time you get up to October, I think they close the mountain on like October 15th or something like
they
that.
They close the mountain.
They close the mountain. And if
wait a minute now. They close the mountain.
Yeah, they close the mountain.
Like there's a big gate.
Yeah.
Sorry, the mountain's closed.
Sorry, mountain's closed.
Nobody goes on the mountain. No way, no how.
Can't get up there. You can't get there from here. I know you just walked 2,200 miles to get to the top of that mountain, but you're too late. Sorry.
We just closed it yesterday.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can't just, like, hike out in the woods, go around it for 40 yards, and pop back up on the trail, and I don't know.
No.
Maybe that's just maybe the anarchist in me.
No, because then you will have missed a section of the trail, and you will not be a through hiker.
I don't know about this. This doesn't seem at all legitimate to me.
You have to hike all the white blazes.
Now, have you looked very much at the John Muir Trail? Isn't that the one in California?
The John Muir Trail is in California. There are three, big through hikes in mm-hmm. North America, and it's the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail.
And that would be in the Cascades?
That goes through, That goes from Mexico to Canada through Death Valley.
Oh.
Yeah, and I've got this friend on Facebook who her and her son, I think they just hiked. I'm not sure. I've
Is
been out of the
loop. Is that proper English, her and her son, or she and her son?
I'm not sure. I think it's she and her son. Regardless.
We do have grammar Nazis that listen to this podcast.
Irregardless.
Can you speak Pacifically?
I can speak Pacifically. Her son is 7 or 8,
mm-hmm.
and they thru-hiked it.
Wow.
And
I'm assuming you're not hiking through Death Valley in the summer.
No, I think they started in, March, and they did that bit first.
That wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, it was pretty harsh. It was the kind of thing that makes you go, I really can't complain about hiking the Appalachian Trail. 7-year-old just whooped me. Yeah. And then there's the Continental Divide Trail too. That's in the middle.
I see. So that goes through probably Colorado and
probably.
Up through there. Does it? Do you know if it goes all the way to the Canadian border? Do you know?
I don't know much about that one.
Hmm.
I'm hoping to do the Appalachian Trail, and maybe, someday in the future I'll want to do those, but we'll see if I survive this one first.
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, I can't take any time off to do anything else during that time, because I have a feeling that if I break off the trail, I won't go back on it.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like if I'm going to be on it, I need to be on it and go.
Right. It's just not practical to start and stop and start and stop and ever expect to get it done.
Yeah.
So you have been at the Kentucky Renaissance Festival.
The Kentucky Highland Renaissance Festival.
Oh, I see.
Yes. I just finished up with that show. Last weekend was the last weekend. And it was decent. It was decent.
Hot.
Hot. Very hot.
You interrupted that to come up to Porkfest for a week.
I did, yeah. I missed a week of that fair. I missed Steampunk Weekend at that fair.
Oh, joy.
Oh, joy. Yeah, I always love people who are into steampunk. I always love saying, well, steampunk is dead, right? And they're like, what? I'm like, well, Justin Bieber did a steampunk music video. Steampunk is dead.
It's like a stake through the heart.
It is.
Shark jumping.
Jumping it. Justin Bieber riding on a steampunk motorcycle over a shark. A steampunk shark.
A steampunk
with
shark.
With a monocle and a top hat.
And a pocket watch.
And a pocket watch.
Because sharks
often... And goggles on the top hat.
Yes.
Can't be steampunk without goggles on the top hat.
And sharks often check their pocket watches right before they bite.
Well, you got to know what time you're eating. You write it in your food diary.
Yeah.
But it was miserably hot, and it's been miserably hot for weeks. And Yeah, and I nearly died.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Passed out several times and then ended up with a relatively severe concussion.
Heat stroke will do that to you.
Yeah, I'm missing huge chunks of that day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember sales.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look, I have sales written down in my book that I don't remember at all.
Wait, that's not a number. It's just a series of spirals.
And then the letters help me scrawled.
Spelled H-A-L-P.
Yeah. Help me. But yeah, it's all of Kentucky is in such a drought right now. It's mm-hmm. so dusty there. We've got so many people who are at that show with hoarse voices and, you know, we've got a couple people that have got pretty severe bronchitis and just because you're breathing in gravel dust 24/7, you know.
The whole Midwest right now is suffering pretty badly. The corn crops, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but the corn crops are, I wouldn't call it on the verge of failure, but they are certainly getting impacted.
Yeah.
This is, you know, when as corn grows, it comes into this time of the year, and the pollination needs to take place, and the corn needs consistent watering to have consistent pollination production.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't consistently produce pollen, because they're self-pollinating, they can't see my hands right now. But
they can't see your hands.
The tassels up are the tassels the part on the corn? No, that's the silks.
Yeah.
So the tassels are the part on the very, very top of the corn plant. And the pollen has to fall from up there. First, the corn plant has to produce the pollen,
right,
which it can't produce without enough water.
Right.
And then the pollen has to fall and land on the silks. And each one of those silks is attached to a corn kernel.
Right.
So each silk has to receive a separate little piece of pollen.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's not enough pollen produced, then the silks don't catch enough pollen and kernels don't develop on the ears.
Right.
So you get these ears of corn with, you know, that have like nine kernels on
right.
the whole ear or whatever because there was no pollination or because there was very poor pollination. So that's the possibility that we're walking into here with the farmers in the Midwest, if they don't get some moisture in the ground. And they don't have, it's not like out in California and out in the West, everything is irrigated.
Right.
But nothing here is irrigated, you know.
Which is so funny because we have drought years. It's not like they're rare. We
right.
have them fairly frequently.
Well, and the obvious reason why there are no irrigation is because... Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter. They're subsidized.
Yeah. So we have a collapse in the farm, in the corn markets. So what? The farmers are all subsidized. There's all kinds of loan programs backed by the government. And the government just shells out money and taxpayers pay it. And then the price of beef goes up and the price of sodas go up. And everything that depends on corn goes up, which
so
is
the price
everything.
And it's interesting because the price of corn doesn't actually go up.
Yeah, because it's all price controlled.
Yeah. And people freak out. They're like, well, see, you know, without the government, the price of corn would go up and you know, nobody would be able to. Well, the price of corn has gone up.
Right.
And if the government pays that difference in price by stealing from the taxpayers.
Yeah, it's the same as the.
Or if the consumer pays that difference in price willingly. That difference in price still has to be paid, and it's coming from the pockets of the taxpayers one way or the other.
The
only difference is if the government subsidizes it, you don't get a say.
Right.
You don't eat corn? Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
You're still going to pay that subsidy.
Right. Anytime the government interferes in any kind of market whatsoever, you distort the price mechanism, specifically with subsidy. I mean, that's the most obvious
right.
with subsidies. But anytime the government interferes in any part of the market, the price mechanism is altered.
Mm-hmm.
And the price mechanism is the motivation that causes, that changes people's decision making. So, and this echoes out into every aspect of the market when you're starting to talk about food.
Yep.
But specifically with the farmers, if the farmers knew that if their crop fails, their farm fails mm-hmm. and they're broke mm-hmm. and they've got to go and, you know, they're going to maybe lose their farm or mm-hmm. whatever. If the farmers knew that, then going into it, they would do things like they would build reservoirs on mm-hmm. their property. They would have irrigation backup set up.
Here's the other thing that it makes happen is that it creates a situation where you're dependent on a few key crops.
Right. Monocropping or because, close to monocropping.
Yeah, because as it stands right now, we have, you know, soybeans and corn and wheat and, you know, that's it, pretty much.
Mostly in the Midwest. And soybeans and corn are the big things, and wheat further out towards Kansas and stuff.
But yeah.
Yeah, those three crops.
You know, you never really hear of a huge shortage in pomegranates.
Right.
Or, you know, anything like that, because there's a wide enough variety. Oh, you didn't get pomegranates in this season? They mm-hmm. they weren't good this season? Okay, well, I'll have a pear instead.
Yeah.
But with the big crops, you don't have that option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not, like, corn is artificially held so low mm-hmm. on price that you don't have the option of saying, oh, it's okay, I'll just use beet sugar instead.
Right.
Or I'll just use cane sugar or any coconut sugar, palm sugar, any of the other sugars that you can use.
Yeah.
You don't have that option because they're not artificially held low the way corn is.
Mm-hmm.
Corn is your only option unless you want to buy a $4 soda.
So the corn prices are going to go nuts. That's mm-hmm. going to cause beef prices to go nuts mm-hmm. and everything else is mm-hmm. going to change because of this. And it's the government's fault.
It's the government's fault.
Fascism.
Yay, fascism.
That's amazing. We just went from Renaissance festivals and Pork Fest and the Appalachian Trail to it's the government's fault and fascism.
Yep. Yep, yep.
But it really is. I mean, you know, markets correct these things on their own. And sometimes they're suffering. That's mm-hmm. the thing about, you know, that's the thing about nature and real life. Sometimes they're suffering. But when the government steals from one group of people to ease the suffering of another group of people, really, yeah, okay, so they're spreading out the suffering. But then people are suffering who shouldn't be suffering.
Right.
And the people who should be suffering are not feeling what they should be feeling. They're not getting the motivation
yep.
to do something about their suffering and change the situation they're in.
Yep. Oh, hey, real quick about corn.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that they have like the genetically modified corn, right?
Right.
And you know it has the
fish genes or whatever in it?
Yeah, well, it's got the bacteria that kill the like silkworms.
Oh, okay.
Right,
yeah.
That eat the corn silks.
Yeah.
Okay, well, they're becoming resistant to it.
No.
Who'd have thunk it?
Let's see,
really?
how's the lyrics go? History shows again and again how nature points out the folly of man.
Yes.
Godzilla. Yes.
I find it funny that worms and animals and bugs and diseases can so rapidly mm-hmm. desensitize themselves to these poisons. But humans are being affected by things that we're telling, you know, oh, no, there's so little in it that it couldn't possibly affect humans. And
yeah.
yet, there it is affecting humans. But the worm you're trying to kill
right.
immediately adapts and it doesn't hurt it
well,
anymore.
Well, part of the reason why, though, is because generations, you know, take these little worms that eat the silks on corn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go through how many generations in a year of that thing? I don't even know.
Right.
But with humans, it takes us, you know, 40, 50, 70 years to complete a generational loop.
Yep.
So by the time that it starts to show up in humans, we've already been, you know, where that little creature is only consuming it for a few months maybe, we're consuming it for years.
Yeah.
So we don't adapt with the same speed, but we end up with horrible diseases because it's like the fish thing with mercury.
Mm-hmm.
If you check the mercury content of a big fish like a tuna or something like that, it'll be much higher than the mercury content in a small fish
mm-hmm.
because the big fish eats a whole lot of the small fish.
Right.
And it builds up in their system. Okay, we're going to break for a commercial. We'll be right back. Hang with us. Folks, have you seen the silver and gold trading cards from Shire Silver? You have to check these out. They're specific weights of real silver or gold laminated inside trading cards, And they're a great way to show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. And now you can buy them using bitcoins or Federal Reserve notes. Folks, you really need to check this out. Go over to Shire Silver, watch the video on the main page, check out the list of merchants that accept silver and gold trading cards, and you can even learn how you can get paid to help spread the word about Shire Silver trading cards. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial, and I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
And this is badquaker.com. See how we do that? It's like professionals on the radio or something.
Now we need all these silly buttons and noises and
Ooga.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is a good time to talk about something that I haven't really talked about on the podcast. Badquaker.com those are almost like words. Badquaker.com is located in a lot of places on the internet. The podcast is, rather.
Mm-hmm.
It's located at badquaker.com, but then it's also on iTunes. It's on the Liberty Radio Network. It's on a German podcasting site called Podcast.de or Podcast Deutschland. And it's other places we don't even know about. There's something I wanted to do for a long time, and that was to have a small, what's it called, a low power radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And on the LRN site, on LRN.fm, there are step-through instructions, or there are links to step-through instructions mm-hmm. on how to build your own low power FM radio station, and for a couple hundred dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always wanted to do that, but I was always a little cumbersome with it,
mm-hmm.
and it was the actual act of pulling the trigger and doing it
mm-hmm.
that kind of held me back. And through some encouragement from a friend, I was able to actually step out and do this, and I had all the equipment to take with me to Porkfest.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to broadcast at Porkfest, low level, so it's just right there in the campground.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going out interfering with anybody else's radio station or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do this if you keep the level low enough, then you're under the FCC's regulations,
right?
And you're okay to do this,
right?
So that's what I was going to do at Porkfest, and I left one component of the radio station at home,
mm-hmm.
and so failure. We weren't able to broadcast at Porkfest. If we make it back to Porkfest next year, I'm going to make every effort to not make that mistake. To
right.
take a complete radio station with me. Anyway, I said all that to say this. So now I got back here, back home in Ohio, and I took all those components, put them back together, and we are broadcasting now. I am the owner of the only radio station in Springboro, Ohio. That makes me a monopolist.
Yeah.
I control all the that makes me the mainstream media in Springboro, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I control. I'm the Ted Turner of Springboro, Ohio. If it's on the radio in Springboro, Ohio, it's because I put it there. But it is really neat to be like, because it's really cool. I can walk around anywhere on the property
mm-hmm.
and with a radio and hear. Right now, it's just broadcasting LRN FM.
Right.
But I can also put my own stuff on there. You know, I've recorded a few things and put them on there. I've made a couple commercials for the radio station and played them and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But it's really cool. You can pick it up anywhere on the property. Walk around, you know, take the dog for a walk, and you walk around the block.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to LRN all the way as you walk around the block.
Nice.
Extend it out further, you actually drive around the neighborhood, and you can get it in your car.
Nice.
All around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you stay under the whatever the settings are, and I don't, you know, it's numbers. They're confusing.
Right.
As long as you stay underneath the settings of the FCC, then it's perfectly legal. Well,
right.
It's not really even law. The FCC's rules are only regulations anyway. They're not actual laws.
Right.
So Congress didn't, like, you know, write them and vote on them or anything.
Right.
The FCC can come out and ask you politely to take it down. Or they can ask to inspect your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're dumb enough to let them in your house, they can confiscate all your stuff.
Right.
But you can just tell them, no, I don't think so. And
yeah.
all they can do is send you a letter asking you to stop.
Right.
That's assuming you're breaking their rules. But if you stay underneath their rules, they don't have a problem.
Right.
You know, as long as some little lady doesn't complain that she heard a naughty word or something,
right,
then it's fine. And even if some little old lady complains she heard a naughty word, how busy is the FCC to be able to come all the way to Ohio to hassle me over some little old lady hearing a naughty word?
Right.
Unless I'm walking on a real station, they're not going to care.
Right.
You know? So anyway, I want to encourage anybody who has thought about this in the past. It is so simple. I actually got my instructions. I didn't get mine from the LRN FM's site because I found those a little cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
But I found instructions on a different website from a guy named Cash Newman. And this guy, Cash Newman, has step-by-step with pictures and mm-hmm. everything. He tells you exactly what components to buy and where to buy them. And I think all you'd have to do is just Google Cash Newman and the words radio station or radio and Cash Newman. You probably find him.
Right.
Anyway, as a matter of fact, I think maybe Michael Dean's site, I'm not sure which one of Michael Dean's site has, he has copied all that stuff and put it up from Cash Newman. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, you get Cash Newman's run through and you just go step by step on it. And it's like according to how much you want to spend, $300-$400, according to how many cables you already have.
Right.
Because, if you already have some good quality cable TV cables,
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing, so you can use those.
Right.
And it's according to if you already have an MP3 player, or in my case, I have a spare computer I set up and hook it to the internet, and it just sits there and plays LRN.
Right.
And, there it goes. So it's pretty cool. Just driving around town, well, it's not all over town, but just within this neighborhood, and being able to receive my radio station in my radio in my car.
Right.
Pretty cool.
I think that'd be awfully cool for me to have and travel around with it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that with the motorhome, with going to different campsites and stuff and setting it up, because it's super easy. And you set it up at a campsite, and you're going to be there a week or whatever. And you can have your radio station mobile with you.
Yeah.
And then, if you want to, set up your radio, if you're at a campsite, and you set up your radio station, and then you just carry a small portable radio with you,
mm-hmm.
then you can go, you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to any songs, any material that you've got on your computer back at your camp.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to those within the radius of that broadcast, which is a pretty good radius if you're, hiking around a campgrounds or whatever. Plus, with having it here, like I have it in town, we're broadcasting the Liberty message, so to speak, out to a pretty good-sized neighborhood and into a downtown area. Technically, if I wanted to pursue it, I could go down into the downtown area here in Springboro and talk to merchants who, maybe they would want to sponsor a commercial on there, and I could actually turn a profit with it, perhaps.
Right.
I don't know if I'd actually turn it. Well, it wouldn't take much to turn a profit when you only have $400 invested in something.
Right.
It doesn't take much money. I mean, much advertising to.
And you probably wouldn't be able to convince the knitting shop that they wanted to. Mm-hmm.
Advertise
on something that's going to be broadcasting LRN. But, the gun shop.
Yeah, or
might.
Coin shop.
Or the coin shop might.
But you don't have to broadcast LRN. You can do, this is one of the things I was thinking of doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can put it on at night
mm-hmm.
to broadcast LRN from, let's say 9 o'clock at night until, 9 o'clock the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 9 o'clock the next morning, I can have 12 hours of my favorite music,
right?
Whole album cuts, or whatever, however I want to do it,
right?
And just turn that, just set, use what's the Microsoft's music player?
Media.
What's it called?
Windows Media.
Yeah. I could just set Microsoft's Windows Media Player to play a preset. It has a name
playlist.
For it. A playlist. Yeah. And so I can play 12 hours of music, stick a couple commercials into it that I've pre-recorded,
mm-hmm.
and let it run for 12 hours.
Right.
And then, at 9 o'clock at night, go over, switch it over to LRN, let that play at night.
Right.
And so, you've got, if My particular taste would be towards classic rock, mm-hmm. but somebody else might want something else, and they could, you know, they could play that all during the day.
Right.
Or switch.
I was actually thinking for the renting campgrounds to do it the opposite. Have the music from like 4 o'clock in the afternoon until like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And then switch it over.
Because all the Rennies are up all night partying.
Right.
Listening to the music.
Right. Not really. People think it's this huge party all the time at Ren Fairs, and it's really not. Like, it's a lot of going and finding hiking trails and going swimming in lakes and, you know, sitting around campfires. And it's sort of what everyone else does on a camping trip, only we do it all the time.
And repairing your Rennie garb and fixing your tents.
And trying to make sure your house doesn't leak.
Yeah.
And trying to do laundry.
And doing
and
any
going
repairs
to Walmart.
On booths.
We go to Walmart a lot.
Which explains people from Walmart's website.
I know people on peopleofwalmart.com. I have yet, I think, I'm pretty sure, and I really don't want to be informed otherwise, that I'm not on People of Walmart. I'm fairly certain I'm not on it, but I know people on it. And in context, those outfits make sense. In context.
Some of them do. Some of the stuff on...
Some of the stuff on People of Walmart, there's no explaining.
There's no context for some of those things.
But...
You can't unsee some of that stuff.
What is seen cannot be unseen. But, you know, if you find some historical reenactor in complete historical reenactor garb at Walmart at 7 o'clock in the morning, it's not because the dude walks around like that all the time.
Right,
it's
and he's not necessarily
he's going
crazy.
Going to an event and he needed ice or beer or whatever, you know.
Do you know you've seen the Lincoln impersonator here in Springboro, right?
Yeah.
He has a truck with the logos on it and stuff. It's really weird when he shows up at Kroger in full costume. You know, because he has gigs he goes to.
Right.
And he has to go in costume, and he goes and he does his speech, or because he does all kinds of things. He does parties. He does motivational speaking things. He goes to businesses and talks to employees. He's got a whole routine that he does.
Right.
And, hey, maybe I could get him to do commercials. I was thinking he'd be a hoot to have on the podcast, because I could grill him about how evil Abraham Lincoln was. So
now,
he could
now
stay in character,
this,
and I could grill him about how many people he murdered.
Is this Abraham Lincoln impersonator the same dude who goes by Abroham Lincoln on Facebook?
No.
That would be awesome.
No, but that dude's pretty cool. Have you read his stuff?
I've read some of it. I have been in a internet and media blackout for the past month.
Yeah.
So it's been very difficult for me to keep up with anything, because I descend down into the valley in Kentucky there, and I get no cell phone reception. It's a 20-minute drive to get to a place where I can make a phone call.
You have to send messages by possum.
Yeah. And squirrel. And the squirrels are not that reliable. Did I tell you about the raccoon?
No.
Ah! This raccoon. Okay, so we've got a raccoon in the campground, right? Raccoon, campground.
Mm-hmm.
You expect it. Except this raccoon is like 2 times the size of a normal raccoon. And his paw prints are like the size of a 5-year-old's handprint.
You sure it's not a small bear?
Yeah.
They're
huge. This thing is huge.
There are bears coming back into Kentucky. The bear population is starting to come back in Kentucky.
That's probably in eastern Kentucky, though.
Yeah.
And we're out in western Kentucky. So one night,
just for people who don't know, there's a huge cultural difference from eastern Kentucky to western Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
If you look on a map, there are no big cities in eastern Kentucky.
No, there's just the hill folk.
Yeah. I like eastern Kentucky. I'm saying that in a positive
This
a positive
is not a
light.
Bad thing.
Eastern Kentucky is where census takers are found hanging naked in a graveyard with fed tattooed or I guess it was it carved or burned or
something
into their body.
I don't remember.
That's the way of eastern Kentucky. They don't much like the fed folks.
But so we have this raccoon, and one night I had gone to the liquor store, and I had bought a bottle of vodka, and I bought a bottle of Bailey's. And they were in a brown paper bag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bottle of vodka was in the brown paper bag. The bottle of Bailey's was sitting right next to it. Unopened. Completely unopened. Went to bed. Left it sitting outside my tent. Wake up about 2 o'clock in the morning to what I think is my neighbor walking up to my tent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there listening, and he doesn't say hey or anything like that. So I'm like, hey, who's out there? Scuttle, 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 scuttle. Hey, who's out there? Scuttle, 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 scuttle. So I get up and I get my flashlight and I look, and whoosh, off the raccoon disappears into the woods with my bottle of vodka. Didn't take the Bailey's, took the bottle of vodka.
Which is an indication that vodka, good, Bailey's not good.
Yes, but you can't make a white Russian without Bailey's.
Yes, but raccoons don't like white Russians. They like straight vodka. They're very particular.
Yeah.
No, and you had actually
had
told me
this story. And the possums don't come and steal my vodka because they have moonshine.
The possum, right. Yeah.
But the possums like won't share with the raccoons.
Well,
so if the raccoons want alcohol, they got to go steal it
themselves. Well, raccoons are thieves.
Raccoons are thieves.
Possums are very industrious. You actually told me that story before, and we may even have it on one of the recordings from Porkfest, but that's okay, because it's
a good
story.
But yeah, that same raccoon ended up ripping a big hole in my neighbor's tent while she was asleep inside, didn't wake her up, and went pawing through her stuff. Evil little things.
We figured out that he probably took the bag with the vodka in it, because he had learned that oftentimes
brown
there's
paper
food
bag
in brown
food.
Paper bags. Yeah. So, you know, brown paper bag means food. Drag away the brown paper bag and look through it later.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because we found the bottle of vodka later lying in the stream,
mm-hmm.
which is not a stream anymore. It's just
it's a dry stream.
Ditch. It's the gully.
Well, that's the difference between a creek and a river.
Yeah.
Creeks are seasonal.
Yeah.
And rivers are not supposed
to
be.
It's definitely a creek. What do they call it in eastern Kentucky?
Crick.
A creek. No, well, the little gully bits.
Branch. They have branches and creeks and
hollows.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hollows.
No, in eastern Kentucky, it's a holler.
A holler.
A
yes.
holler. A crick. A branch.
So weird. Linguistics is so weird. So bizarre. But yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's been fun being in Kentucky. I really like Kentucky a lot. The people there have been very nice to me. I have no idea where I'm going next.
Mm.
No idea. But I probably, well, I'll definitely be gone for at least the next couple of weeks. So
you were saying the possibility you might be going to a Ren Faire in New York?
In New York, yeah.
Did you not learn your lesson about New York?
Well, yeah. But, you know, money. There's that whole money thing.
They have money in New York.
They have money in New York.
I understand they have money in New York.
New York is a weird place. Selling is weird, and selling in different areas is bizarre, because you have to use completely different tactics. With the people in New York, you have to ignore them. When they walk in the booth, you can say hello, but then you ignore them. And you don't try to sell to them.
Yeah.
Because they will walk away if you try to do that. Whereas, like, the people in Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
you walk them over, you tell them what they're going to buy, you tell them how much it is. Like, you have to use such specific selling techniques to so many different people.
Yeah.
But it's really bizarre. And New York, if you treat them the way they want to be treated, they will spend money with you.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, well, let's take our second break and get a commercial in here. We'll be right back in just 30 seconds. Stick with us. Folks, I want to talk to you about Survival Gear Bags. Survival Gear Bags is about more than just great gear bags and survival kits. Check out their website by clicking the banner at badquaker.com. Survival Gear Bags has everything from Wise food storage products to tactical equipment to camping supplies to clothing and rain gear to hydration and purification systems to books and DVDs. Plus, Survival Gear Bags is known for its service, and it's owned and operated by people who understand and adhere to the zero aggression principle. So get over to Survival Gear Bags and get the stuff you need. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial. And before, well, I still have Kai with me on the podcast. I did want to get to some of the notes that I had for today's podcast. I can't do all of the notes from today because we just spent
40 minutes talking about nothing.
Raccoon.
Yeah, it was kind of unexpected. I sort of just showed up randomly in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And because I have no reception, so it's not like I could have called and been like, I was on my way.
Yeah, so at like 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, Kai just shows up, dog's freaking out, cat's running around the house.
Sorry, guys. Sleeping now.
Put 3 rounds of shotgun of double-aught shot through the front window.
No.
Got a machete stuck through a door.
No.
No, we're very controlled here. We don't... Anyway.
They're used to random hippies showing up at all hours of the day or night.
Yes, this is kind of a free sleep zone for hippies around here. We have rooms just for that purpose. We should set up a hostel here, you know, because this is a mecca.
You should not encourage hippies to show up here.
Springboro, the mecca of the hippie mecca.
You don't watch South Park. I get to make a pop culture reference you're not going to get. Yay!
I don't watch South Park.
South Park episode with the hippies. The Hippie Jam Band Festival. Oh, it's awesome. Anyone who has watched it is now rolling in laughter. But not you, because you didn't watch it.
I don't get it. I don't watch South Park. I try to watch as little TV as possible.
That's because you're old. Well, no, that's not true. I don't watch it. I don't even own a TV. I don't own a TV. I do have Netflix, but I think I'm going to cancel it because I haven't used it in 2 months.
I don't know if it's worth us going into this topic. I was going to talk about about over-the-counter medications that have disappeared.
Yeah.
But it's such a big topic that I don't know if we can really squeeze it into the podcast today, because we just seem to kind of be rolling along talking about all kinds of other nonsense.
Yeah, well, I mean, we should at least talk about it a little bit, even if you want to go more in depth with it on a later podcast.
Yeah, that's probably what I should do. I've got a list of, now this is not a complete, this is not an all-inclusive list. Mm-hmm. This is just a few things that I've run into just in the last couple days as I started to look at this topic. But I've got a list of medications that either are no longer available at all, mm-hmm. as in not being produced, or very hard to get a hold of, mm-hmm. or becoming hard to get a hold of because other medications, because of the lack of other medications, are forcing a doubling of their sales. So
the big one, I was shocked at Excedrin Migraine.
Yeah.
Because I can't even, I don't even understand why they don't make it anymore. Like, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked really, really well for people with migraines. I know people who had recurring migraines who swore by Excedrin Migraine.
The from what I'm reading, the ones that are no longer being manufactured are Bufferin, No-Doze, Gas-X, Primatene Mist, Excedrin Migraine, possibly Rolaids. There's a shortage of Excedrin because Excedrin Migraine is disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Excedrin is becoming really, really hard to come by. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if it was Excedrin Migraine or Excedrin that in some places is going for $300-$500 a bottle on the internet because of the shortage of it. And the shortage of Excedrin is causing a shortage in Tylenol. And evidently what people are doing to overcome the shortage in Excedrin Migraine,
mm-hmm.
is they're taking a high dose of Tylenol,
which is horrible for your
which
liver,
which is really hard on your liver, especially if you drink any at all, even like one drink a day or mm-hmm. less. Tylenol is really hard on your liver when in combination with alcohol,
right?
But so they're taking a high dose of Tylenol, a high dose of aspirin,
which is really hard on your stomach.
Yeah, and a high dose of caffeine. And the three together are mimicking what Excedrin migraine would do. But you don't have the buffering effect to, you know, to make it calm down and not hurt your stomach and so
forth.
Well,
plus
like
you can't. You can't take no-dose anymore. So you have to drink like a 5-hour energy shot or something like that, which
is... Yeah, or two or three.
Yeah, which is a harsher form on your stomach again.
Or you can do what they want you to do and go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And
so instead of paying $5 for a bottle of Excedrin migraine that will allow you to not have your migraine...
Right.
You have to go to the doctor, and you have to have insurance, and you have to pay the doctor, and you have to pay your insurance, and you have to pay the pharmacy so that you can get a prescription for some horrific painkiller that is going to do awful things to you, and you may get addicted to. And
it may not even affect the migraine.
It may not work.
There are painkillers that are strong painkillers that won't touch a migraine.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing about a migraine. Now, back after some of my last head injuries, long-time listeners know what I'm talking about. I've had over 35 concussions. So, after some of my concussions, I have gone into phases where I would go months where I would have migraines during the daytime and then cluster headaches at night.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about a migraine is that... they're not dependable.
Right.
They can hit randomly. They can hit very... Now, not always. Sometimes I could feel a migraine coming on hours ahead of time and be prepared for it.
Right.
But sometimes it would just be like, bam, there's a migraine. It's on you. You're sick to your stomach. You can't handle light. You can't handle noise. You don't want to talk to anybody. The last thing you want to do is get on a phone, which literally the sound of a phone hurts my head when I have a migraine.
Right.
Get on a phone, make an appointment, go down... tolerate everybody in the doctor's office, and then talk to the doctor and then beg for a medication for your stupid migraine.
Right.
All you could otherwise you could just go to the shelf in your bathroom and get a pill for it.
Yeah, well, and it's becoming so difficult to get pain medications at the doctor anyway. You know, there's so many restrictions, and doctors are almost afraid
to
prescribe pain medication.
Yeah, there are doctors who have just stopped doing it because there's so many complications with the government.
Well, and pharmacies have shortages.
Yeah, when I was in some of the worst of my arthritic pain a few years ago, I have been on some pretty hefty pain medications at times, and... you know, I didn't think too much about it. I thought, well, I've run out of my pain medication. Well, I don't use it every day anyway. Sometimes I go weeks without using it.
Right.
And so the prescription was run out. No big deal. I'll make it down there.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I made it down and dropped off the refill.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, it's going to be a couple weeks. Couple weeks?
Mm-hmm.
For pain medication, because they had already put out their allotment for that time frame.
Yep.
And they don't get any more because, you know, they regulate, because the pharmacy doesn't want an investigation.
Yep.
They don't want to be looked at like, oh, you know, you're putting out too.
Yep.
So, you know, the government interference in this, because why? Because there might
you're not allowed to grow a plant.
Yeah, actually, that's the truth. Because most people, well, I don't know about most, but a lot of people... could be helped much easier just by smoking some marijuana. And I don't smoke any, I don't take any illegal medications or drugs or anything like that at all.
Yep.
I haven't smoked marijuana since 1980, I think. But considering how many people could be helped in situations like that.
I've seen people have a full-blown migraine and smoke a couple hits of marijuana, and they weren't fine. Like, they still had a headache, but they could function.
Yeah. I'm told for a lot of people, people with cluster headaches, I'm told that that's one of the most effective methods of fighting a cluster headache.
That and mushrooms.
I read that too. The thing with a cluster headache, if
they're doing crazy, amazing stuff, not not to turn this into the pro-drug, you know, but they're doing some pretty amazing stuff with post-traumatic stress disorder and mood disorders and depression and hallucinogenics.
Yeah.
The research that's being done is pretty amazing.
In the late 50s and early 60s, before the government decided that hallucinogenics were bad and nobody could have them anymore, there were a lot of people, like there's a very famous actor, I can't remember his name. He was in the movie North by Northwest. He was in a lot of movies. He was very, very popular in the 50s and early 60s. Anyway, he actually went before Congress and testified that hallucinogenics had, you know, when they were trying to outlaw him, and mm-hmm. he was testifying against them,
mm-hmm.
That hallucinogenics had, through his psychiatrist, had mm-hmm. given him, and it had kept him stable and kept him from losing his mind.
Mm-hmm.
But now a doctor can't, that's out of the doctor's tool bag. He can't even use that anymore.
And it's so difficult because, you know, if you could go to a licensed therapist, or not even licensed, if you could go to a therapist who had, you know, been trained and knew what they were doing, and you could take these things in a controlled setting, you run so very little risk of having a bad trip or having it do damage to you, because, you know, you can do damage to your psyche with hallucinogens.
Right.
You know, but that's only if you do it in ways that you shouldn't be doing it.
Well, and part of the problem there, too, is because it's a black market, and mm-hmm. it's not a free market.
Yep.
Because it's a black market.
There's no market regulations. And I don't mean regulations that come from the
government or something.
From an agency with an acronym for a name.
Yeah.
I mean market regulations.
Yeah, because even something as important as electricity, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, when electricity was really starting to become the trend,
mm-hmm.
there were no government regulations on this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a problem, you know, that you have a dangerous thing there.
Mm-hmm.
So things like the Underwriters Laboratory sprang up
mm-hmm.
to certify stuff as to whether it was good and safe or not.
Yeah.
And so you'd have the same thing in the drug industry without the government's interference. There would be standards that would appear. And then you could actually see, you know, you look at a particular medication, and it would, if it's stamped with the seal of approval by
yep.
a respectable organization, then you could have some trust in it.
Yep.
But not now.
Nope.
Now, you know, these people are buying stuff off of the street from who knows who that was made under who knows what circumstances
yep.
in a
bathtub
someplace.
And laced with who knows what.
Yeah. And so a lot of the substances like that are in the underground market are just not safe because they maybe have a small percentage of the real drug in them,
mm-hmm.
but they use all other kinds of things to cut them with.
Yep.
And that's because it's a black market.
Yep.
Cary Grant was the guy's name.
Cary Grant.
Yeah, very famously fought to try to keep the government's nose out of the hallucinogenic industry.
Yeah.
But they shut it down anyway.
It's ridiculous to think how many things that the free market could do, how much good the free market could do, how many innovations that we have the technology to create.
Yeah.
We have the ability to do it, but we can't because the free market is held in check.
Yeah.
And it's mind-boggling to me that as a human species
mm-hmm.
that we allow this to happen.
Yeah. I mentioned cluster headaches. I should clarify that because a lot of people don't know what cluster headaches are. They're also called suicide headaches.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of confusion. There's a little bit better publicity now about mm-hmm. them than there used to be. Just a few years ago, doctors had no idea what you were talking about. They would either think you were lying or you're crazy or whatever.
Or, oh, well, you have a migraine.
Yeah. And many, many doctors misdiagnosed cluster headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of unnecessary nonsense. But cluster headaches, and the thing with cluster headaches, the reason they're called the suicide headaches is because in the past, you would find somebody in a garage dead with a skill saw in their hand, you know, a power rotary mm-hmm. power saw in their hand, and the top of their skull cut off,
mm-hmm.
and it would say, well, it is a bizarre case of suicide. Well, the person was literally driven insane by the pain of the headache,
right?
And cutting the top of their head off with a skill saw seemed like the logical thing to do, rather than continue with the headache they were having,
right?
You know, or they would show up in an emergency room with 19 holes drilled through their skull from a drill press or something,
right?
Because they had gotten it into their head that they're
they needed to relieve the pressure.
Yeah, because that's what it feels like. It feels like your head is just going to explode.
Right.
I've had them where it literally felt like that if I didn't hold pressure against my eyes would pop out.
Ooh.
And it, you know, it's not true. They
right,
won't.
Right.
And you have to when you're in the middle of a cluster headache, you have to constantly struggle with sanity. And force yourself to because mine weren't so bad in like some people's because mm-hmm. mine hit in 15-minute segments.
Right.
And you could almost set a timer to them. So for 15 minutes, I would be in unbearable pain that I've gritted my teeth so hard during a migraine. I've snapped teeth off more mm-hmm. than once. I've broken several teeth during cluster headaches. Did I say migraine?
Yeah.
I meant cluster headaches. Migraines are not that bad. They're sickening and they're painful, but they're not that bad.
Right.
Anyway, but the saving grace of my clusters are that I know in 15 minutes they're going to stop.
Right.
So all I've got to do is just survive until that moment clicks, you know, and the clock clicks 15 minutes, and then it's gone. It's over with. And I don't know what the mechanism is in my body that times them out like that.
And pain is so weird because it's so difficult to really empathize with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't really know, you have no ability to tell how much pain another human being is in.
Right.
And you have no ability to describe how much pain you're in.
Yeah, the doctor asks you to describe it on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is the most that you can handle and 1 isn't. What?
Yeah. Have you seen the oatmeal? I think it's from the oatmeal where it's
Quaker oats.
No. The cartoon of the pain scale and what it ought to be.
I don't think it's
hysterical. I'll have to link it. I'll link it to you on Facebook, on the badquaker.com Facebook. It's hysterical. It's what the doctor's pain scale ought to look like.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's trying to describe because, you know, I've never had pain that badly, but with endometriosis,
mm-hmm.
you have pain that you can't function with it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you see these people and they're like, oh, I had cramping and I took a Midol and now I'm running down the beach. And you're like, I would murder someone to be able to have the kind of pain that would go away with an over-the-counter pill.
Yeah.
Like, please let me have that sort of pain.
Oh.
You know, I can take Midol like they're candy and I'm still curled in the corner bawling.
Your body just laughs at the Midol. Is that the best you've got?
Puny human with your silly pills.
Well, Kai, I'm really glad you came up. It's really good to see you.
Yay.
You know, it's good to have you around the house, at least for a day that you're going to be here.
Yep.
And I know your mom's going to want to see you as soon as she gets home from work.
Yep.
But it's been really great to have you on the podcast. And
I have no idea when I'm going to get to be back
yeah.
on the podcast.
So
sometime between now and forever.
Yeah. So until then, you know, listeners are just going to be stuck with me. But like I always say at the end of each podcast, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye, folks.
Bye.